Do I have everybody's attention now? I was suspended by Vincent K. McMahon because of some things that I said. I didn't get in trouble because I announced July 17th is the day my contract comes to an end. And trust me when I tell you, I am leaving with the WWE Championship. I didn't just get in trouble because I said this company inside and outside the ring are filled with a parade of shameless ass kissers. I didn't just get in trouble because of this little nugget. And I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead. I got in trouble basically because I have the balls to say things that nobody else has the balls to say. But never fear, tonight, not only am I reinstated...
CM Punk's reinstated, you've got your match.
Vince McMahon desperately wants to sign me to a very long-term, very lucrative contract with World Wrestling Entertainment. It's funny to me that Vince is bending over backwards to give me everything I've ever wanted.
My face on everything. I want cups, posters, spoons, knives, forks, my own jet. CM Punk the movie!
And the reason that's funny is because all I've ever really wanted is this little microphone. See, this is power.
I am the voice of the voiceless.
Do I have everybody's attention now? In anybody else's hands, this is a microphone. In my hands, it's a pipe bomb.
Vince, I'll kick you in the nuts and you'll smile at me and like it and show me some respect.
You're one of the biggest bullies I have ever met in my entire life, and you will apologize.
Apologize.
You will apologize, and you...
Sorry, okay? I'm sorry.
What?
I apologize, you son of a bitch!
Fine speech. You talk about hypocrites. Punk, you're the biggest hypocrite of them all. You are CM Punk!
The hottest property in this industry today.
You beat your own drum, but in the path of doing things you want to do, you've lost sight of everything.
I've lost sight?
You!
Are the one that's lost sight.
That's lost sight.
I am the underdog, and what you are
is what you hate.
You're the 10-time WWE champion.
You're the man.
Ladies and gentlemen, the champ is here. You, like the Red Sox, are no longer the underdog. You're a dynasty. You are what you hate. You have become the New York Yankees.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Sunday night. Say goodbye to the WWE title. Say goodbye to John Cena. And say goodbye to CM Punk.
CM Punk walks out with his championship. Yeah! Do I have everybody's attention now?
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling, welcome to episode number 2 of Pedestal. I am this episode's host, Sean Kidd, and I am joined, much like our last episode, with the same crew tonight to look at a different match. So up first tonight, Ben Locke, how are you doing this evening?
I am very well this evening. Sean, how are you, my friend?
I am doing fantastic, Ben. Just happy to be here. I love the first episode, so really, really excited to talk about tonight's match because I think this will be a good one, too.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about another great match, which pleases me a lot.
Absolutely. Me too. I haven't watched this match probably in 10 years since it first happened, so I'm very excited to talk about it. Also joining us tonight, Colin McDougall. How are you tonight?
I am wonderful, Sean. Thank you very much. As long as the internet keeps holds on for the next half an hour to an hour, I will be even happier.
Yeah, full disclosure, we recorded two episodes on the same night, and British Internet is rearing its ugly head tonight, but unfortunately it's for Colin tonight, not necessarily Ben, but I probably jinxed you tonight, Ben, now. So Colin, welcome. Thanks for joining us again tonight. And last but certainly not least, Scott Shiflett, how are you tonight?
I'm glad to be here with you guys as we talk about, I'm going to lay it down on the page, one of the my favorite matches of all time and what got me sucked back into wrestling as to what the height of it is that I'm into wrestling right now is this match and Angle. So I'm laying it out there.
Yeah.
I hope not to be disappointed.
Yeah, so we'll jump right into it. It's interesting you brought you into wrestling because this year, the year prior to this match was probably one of the worst years in WWF history, and I feel like this one is very well known for maybe bringing it back to a piece of glory that it had missed. So tonight, full disclosure, we are going to talk about CM Punk versus John Cena at Money in the Bank 2011. Again, one of those matches, as per every match we'll talk about on this podcast, one of those matches that people put up there is one of the greatest matches of all time up on that pedestal. So much like our last episode, we will go through the three buckets of the build, the match, and the history and see if it holds up. And as always, it must at minimal come out with a four across the board to be considered a pedestal match. So right now, the only match we have out there right now is our first episode. We did Savage and Steamboat. That one netted out at a 4.39 average, so it is on the pedestal. We'll see if this one holds up. So with that, guys, are you ready to jump into the build for this match?
Yes.
Let's go. Yes.
All right, so first off, if you listen to Through the Looking Glass podcast that debuted a couple weeks ago, Scott went through this. I forget. Scott's co-host on that is who? I apologize, guys. Who was that?
It's Dave Hall.
Dave Hall. I apologize, Dave Hall. But Dave and Scott went through this. The pipe bomb, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So we're not going to go line by line, but we're going to get a short synopsis of the build. We'll go through and we'll talk about the ranking of the build and what our thoughts were, and then we'll jump into the match. So after becoming the number one contender for the WWF Championship the prior week, that same night, CM Punk attacked John Cena and dropped his iconic pipe bomb on an episode of WWE Raw. CM Punk slammed WWE and said he's done working with bootlickers like John Cena, and CM Punk then revealed, this is a big deal at the time, that his WWE contract would expire at midnight on July 17th, 2011, a day in the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and vowed to win the championship and leave the company with it. We'll talk about that in a minute, as we're going to talk about the whole build and then talk about that. On the next episode, CM Punk once again attacked John Cena and broke his WWE character by talking to the camera and delivering another pipe bomb. CM Punk said that after becoming a WWE champion and leaving the company, he would defend the title in other wrestling companies such as Ring of Honor, and New Japan Pro Wrestling. After the promo, Vince McMahon suspended CM Punk and took him out of Money in the Bank championship match. Very, very no-no to mention other wrestling companies in this, so this is already off to a hot start. John Cena slammed Vince McMahon and said he would leave the company as WWE champion if McMahon didn't bring CM Punk back. Vince McMahon agreed to bring Punk back, but relented on condition Cena lost the title. He would be fired, and Cena agreed. And on the following episode of Raw, McMahon tried to buy CM Punk with a new contract and agreed all the demands CM Punk had made earlier. He even apologized to Punk before John Cena interrupted the proceedings. The segment resulted in Cena punching CM Punk, after which the voice of the voiceless tore up the agreed contract. So that's kind of the short overview of the build. Before we get into this match, they also showed the build to this match prior to the match starting, but we're not going to go through that. We're just going to jump right into the match. But I will start with you first, Ben. What did you think of the build at the time to this match as we headed into it?
Okay, so let's backtrack to 2011 if we can, gents, because I am very much the same as Scott in terms of I wasn't watching until the pipe bomb. I had switched. The last pay-per-view I watched was WrestleMania 26. So I had gone, 14, 15 months to that stage? And I didn't watch any wrestling at all. And I've told this story plenty of times on Special Relations. Callum's heard the story. From about 2005 onwards, I went from watching week to week to watching pay-per-views to then just stopping. And it was the pipe bomb that brought me back. And I think there is a large percentage of wrestling fans who are still, who were fans then and are still fans today. And the probably the at least top three reason will be the pipe bomb promo. You know, we'll get into the match itself, but you know, I'm not going to use that voice of the voiceless phrase that Punk uses, but he really was speaking for me. Everything in that promo, there's truth to it. You know, the shoot style, whatever, however you want to phrase it, it just worked because he was talking like a normal, rational human being, and that's what I loved about it.
Okay, so Ben, what did you rank it on a scale of 1 to 5?
I will go 4.75, because I think the build to the match, like the pipe bomb is a 5 on its own, but you've got to knock a couple of little bits off, you know, the Johnny Ace involvement and, like you say, some of the Cena stuff. But so I'll knock a little bit off of that, but you know, it is almost the perfect package. And like Scott said, this is probably one of my favorite matches, and it just sucked me back in, and I made sure I watched this pay-per-view live. That's how invested I was into this.
Yeah, you know, Ben, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with 4.75, and here's why. Punk was not on a greatest of tears in terms of his wrestling career. He had been jobbing out a lot. He'd been losing a lot, and you could sense that frustration. So when this powerbomb situation happened, and he just went off and did this whole pipeline shoot, and you can believe who you want or whatever the backstage stories is. He went off script. He didn't go off script. It doesn't matter. What they did is took a very stale product, and CM Punk single-handedly got people to come back and watch the WWE, including myself. I had given up on the WWE. You can only take so many Kane Undertaker world title matches in 2010 before you'll check out. but this was an amazing promo. And then they continued to build on it. Like, they were so out of their element in what this was, in terms of what they had habitually been over the last year or so, that this totally felt like a refresh, almost like a reset, that quite honestly, in today's WWE, they could probably stand to find another way to do something like this to get the fire going again. Because I thought the build was perfect. I think the Punk mentioning the other company saying he's taking the title with them. Cena saying that he'll quit with the belt, and then McMahon firing him. By the way, his contract is ending. Like, it's the whole perfect scenario to bring interest into it. Oh, by the way, let's not forget to mention the match is happening in CM Punk's hometown of Chicago. You had the perfect, like, concoction of a wrestling feud and a match just all into one, and the timing of it's beautiful. So I'm going 4.75 like Ben. Scott, I will go to you next.
Yeah, as these guys said, it's just great. I remember I was at a buddy's house when they had the contract signing before, when he tore up the contract, and that was right before Money in the Bank. And I was there because I don't know how I remember this, but there was a video game coming out that night, and me and a couple buddies were going to GameStop to pick it up, and we were hanging out, and I was like, watch the end of this. It's going to be amazing, because I was telling them what was going on. They were lapsed wrestling fans. They were into it. And like, you know, Punk's pipe bomb promo was getting picked up by like ESPN. They thought it was real. Like, I remember Jim Rohn's dumbass was like, you know, he actually is getting able to say what he wants. And I was like, but like when it hits, like, because WWE for the longest time had not hit the cultural zeitgeist. They hit the zeitgeist again with this. Punk was on Jimmy Kimmel during this time as well with Cousin Sal. So it hit a lot of spots with this. And, you know, like Ben said, he watched the pay-per-view. We had like a little pay-per-view party at my buddy's house where we ordered like pizza. We all chipped in for the pay-per-view. It was like the Attitude Era again. It felt like something new and refreshing was happening with the WWE. So I'm going for the build. I'm going the full 5. I just thought it was great. And like, you know, a little more backstory. I just graduated college, was working 3 to 11, hated my life. And like wrestling like saved me that summer after I graduated. So it was, and this is what saved it, was this pipe bomb in the summer of Punk. So that's why I got to go the full 5. So, but Callum, what do you think?
I'm with you. Scott, I think, full five, because there's not very many. You can count on one hand the times where, like, actual business industry changing moments. You've got Hogan. Hogan and Andre, maybe, or just Hogan in general in the '80s. You've got the NWO. You've got potentially you could put in the Austin Mike Tyson confrontation on Raw, and then you've got this in 15 minutes. CM Punk gave the WWE the rocket up the rear end that it needed and it had been needing for years up until that point. Especially as Sean said right at the start. 2010 was the absolute drizzling you-know-whats. It was horrendous to watch. It was actually a chore to watch. It was not enjoyable. And with just, it was almost like this small island that CM Punk had created for himself and created in this storyline was almost the Attitude Era coming back into the, and the PG, like this wee bit of an of the Attitude Era and the PG Era, and it brought people back to watching wrestling full time. Scott, you said you were with some lapsed wrestling fans. Ben was a lapsed wrestling fan by the sounds of things at that point. It was different, and much like we said for the first episode, it was different to anything else that was happening at that time. And for all the times you've got, I don't know what in 2011 I couldn't tell you what Impact were doing. I couldn't tell you what Ring of Honor were doing. But certainly from a WWE standpoint, it was so much different to anything else that was going on. So I can't, for the impact that it's had, To get people back into watching wrestling, I think it has to be five stars.
I mean, one of the things as well, boys, that we need to talk about is I know we're focusing on this match in particular, but the whole build for this pay per view was unbelievable. I mean, you know, we talk nowadays about how exciting. I mean, you know, another pay per view that took place in Chicago, All Out, a couple of weeks ago. How excited everybody was for that. And I remember how excited and how people, like I say, I was a Laps fan and other Laps fans were talking about this pay-per-view. They were getting so into it. Not just this match, but, you know, everything that was up and down this card. I don't know, to this day, I still don't know how they caught lightning in a bottle in that month.
Yeah, you're 100% right. It's like it's almost like this match helped reset their whole, probably one of the best pay-per-views they had done in a long, long time. I can't go back and think about which one was probably better or one that was as good at the time or how far back it was. But this one was a really great pay-per-view overall, actually.
So it's got to be up there for like best B-show pay-per-view ever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So everybody talked about their build. We have it 4.87 on the build. So coming in strong on Steamboat Savage, it was a 4.806. So clearly build here definitely captured everybody's imagination on it. I think the end result of it, as we talk about it, is it actually got many of us back involved in the WWE after a very tiring 2010. So with that, are you ready to get into the match?
Yes.
Let's do it.
All right. So we are paused. Again, it's different, but I think we're on what? I think I'm on 205.03 if I'm looking at the Peacock, and it will be immediately after the Money in the Bank flashes on the screen and we see a shot at the live crowd. So on 3-2-1, hit play. 3-2-1, go. Great shot of the crowd here in Chicago.
The bad thing for you, Sean, here is that because we've got the volume turned down, you're not going to hear the dulcet tones of Booker T on commentary.
Oh, well, not only that, but the crowd reaction to CM Punk is also off the chain as well. Yeah,
that's another slight issue.
I think the CM Punk chance is much bigger issue than Booker T on commentary.
in all seriousness, this is one of the greatest entrances of all time. I will put that out there.
Which they kind of recaptured a little bit, timely manner on CM Punk's return a few months ago.
Yeah.
So is this the first time we've seen that shirt? Because if I remember correctly, in 2011, when he did that pipe bomb promo, he was wearing a Nexus shirt.
Well, actually, Sean, he was wearing an Austin shirt. Sorry.
During the promo. But it was Nexus when it first started, correct?
Yeah, he was in New Nexus when it started. And with the shirt, it was one of the first times WWE released a shirt just for like a certain event. Like, I went to the draft a couple weeks ago and they had like draft t-shirts. But this was the first time they did a shirt like this. And I was like, I want one so bad. And then they ended up releasing the main one, because this shirt actually has like the date and the venue on the back where it says like the Chicago and everything, instead of like the best in the world thing.
How much do you think this shirt is worth now? If you were in that crowd and bought it, I mean, think about the moment, this, like, historically, if you were there, this is a big historical moment.
I remember looking and it was like $250 at that initially on eBay. I'm not sure how much longer.
It looks like I'm going to go to eBay.
Just have a quick look, Callum, while we're here. Another historical note, Sean. This is the last time that we hear this fire burns. He goes, when he comes back, it's straight on to Cult of Personality.
Great call as well. Yeah, it changes his music. Absolutely. Look at that, man. Just how good, if you're CM Punk, how good must this feel after years of just kind of twirling away in WWE?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Like, if the Punk wins, we riot sign. I remember the crowd just being so stoked. It's awesome. And with him screaming, it's clobbering time right here.
Yeah, he's fired. He's fired up.
I mean, the other part of it, I mean, I know I keep talking about things that we can't hear. Like, on commentary, I mean, you know, you guys might remember this better than me, but they're really trying to push sort of Punk is kind of a heel for wanting to leave the company and, you know, taking the title with him. But, you know, like, the crowd is just having none of that, aren't they? It's just like, yeah, we love this guy.
It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of a version, but a different version, a totally different character of Steve Austin's anti-authority character. It's just done differently, so it doesn't feel like it's the same shtick, right? Even though Vince is involved, it feels very different, even though it is a similar kind of track.
I mean, obviously it helps massively that it's in Chicago, massive, massive factor. But like I say, there was something about the pipe bomb promo and then the other promos that followed that just resonated with people. They got it, like you say, like, the product was that stale, the anti-authority thing, you know, wasn't totally played out at that stage.
And this is like the first time, like, you felt like you didn't know what the hell was going to happen in wrestling.
Yes.
Like, everything else, like Cena, I mean, Cena that May went up against R-Truth. Now, I enjoyed that little R-Truth heel run where he was like the main event, but I knew there was no way in hell R-Truth was going to win at Capital Punishment. So, like, this one felt like, oh my God, what the hell is going to happen? Like, you know, you had a feeling like, was WWE going to screw Punk out, like, you know, like they did with Brett? So it's like, it made you want to watch the show. And, like, you see how much the crowd's just, like, going crazy, right? I mean, I just know because I've watched the match so many times that they're chanting CM Punk. He's going nuts. And he just took the shirt off of it and gave it to, I think that's his mom, but Ace Steel and Colt Cabana are sitting right there.
You had to remind me that R-Truth was in the main event of Capitol. You had to remind me of that, didn't you? And by the way, also in Survivor Series, that's where Cena and The Rock take on him and The Miz, I guess, this year?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
That's with Awesome Truth.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, there was, you know, there'd been no, like, leak about him signing a contract. So, you know, going back off what Scott said, you didn't know whether they'd have the actual balls to let Punk win the match at this stage.
Yeah. That's actually a great point, because this is like, you're not sure where they're at. So he comes out with this shirt that we never see and the dates on it. And, you know, you just don't know where they're going to go with it. And that's what also made this match so great, is, all internet aside, we all knew that his contract was expiring. We had no idea if he'd resigned. And, like, legit, you had no idea who was going to win this match, which made it, that also gave it that extra special kick a little bit, I think. And, like, I want to say it defeated the internet and the spoiling, You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, to quote another podcast, the rumor and innuendo is he signed the contract this night, didn't he? That is the rumor.
That's the rumor.
And like going back to like to the build for this, I do remember. Let's see, there's Colt Cabana right beside Punk right there. One of the lines I do remember from this, not even from the pipe bomb, it's when Cena, who's a Red Sox fan, says that he's turned into what the Red Sox hate, the Yankees. And like, I know, yeah. Sean, you're not a big sports fan, but like, that's just like, and like Cena got pissed off and then punches him, and then that's when Punk rips up the contract. It was just great. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm not a big baseball guy, but even I got that reference.
And it's just like, do you think the crowd's has more vitriol here now to Punk or for One Night Stand? It's got to be One Night Stand though, right?
Yeah, I don't think they hate Cena. I think they're just very pro Punk. Whereas I think the crowd at One Night Stand hated Cena.
Is Colm still on?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I'm still here.
Any thoughts you'd like to share? I know we've been talking. So let me add Colm in.
I'm taking it all in. I'm taking it all because it's been a while since I've seen this one. Although
been 10 years for me. Yeah, me too.
The one thing that did pop up to my mind was about R-Truth. Again, being the number one contender at one point. Small tidbit about that. Ben, do you remember why the WWE get fined when R-Truth, when they were over here, right before the Capital Punishment match?
Oh, he didn't. He wasn't smoking, was he?
He was. It was just after the smoking ban, and he lit a cigarette when he was trying to be all bad man with John Morrison. So there you go.
So R-Truth got into trouble for that?
Yes, because it was not long after there was an indoor smoking ban in all public places, and WWE get fined because R-Truth lit a cigarette.
I'm pretty sure someone said, like, you can't do that. Like, you can hear one of the fans, like, chanting, like, you can't do that when he, like, lit it up. It's stupid how much I remember of 2011 WWE, but I can't remember shit from 2019.
See, Scott, I'm that way, like, 80s, 90s WWE, and today, and in 2011, I'll be like, wow, what the fuck are you talking about? That's why I'm asking about this archery thing. It's so weird. So, yeah, it really stalled start. This has been a long, long intro and a long, long start. They haven't even locked up yet.
One thing I was looking at as well is anyone that listens, I think, well, predominantly to the Special Relations, I always talk about it, but get the good friends over at cagematch.com, because they've got like individual ratings for some matches. So there has been 665 votes for this match. On a 1 to 10 ranking scale, would you care to guess what the actual ranking is on this match, on Cage Match?
Ooh, wow. I'm going to say 9.1.
I'll go a little higher. I'll say 9.34. I'll go really precise.
I'm going 9.5.
Oh, Scott wins 9.64.
Holy cow. Out of how many votes? 600 something?
665. So there's 515 tens, 88 nines, 45 eights, 11 sevens, 5 sixes, an actual 1.5.
Honestly, based on, I mean, I don't know how you go down to 5 and 6. Well, let's watch the match. It'll spoil it. That's crazy.
So here's a question I'm going to ask right here, right now. Was this the match where people kind of realized that John Cena was good?
I think this match definitely accentuated Cena. Yeah, you know, I think he was good before this.
No. So what I mean by that is, like, he was good before this. No, I quite agree with you, but like, people didn't realize how good he was.
I think this definitely did as much to put over Punk as it did. I put as much over Cena as it did Punk. I agree with you. I think it did. But I think there's other matches that did it, but I think this one really stood out in 2011 during a dull point of the WWE. It really brought both these guys to prominence, I think, at the time.
Because, you've got to remember, as you know, we talk about like the stagnation of the product. We're in full like LOL Cena wins territory here.
Well, yeah, I mean, naturally, I assumed at the time that Cena was going to beat Punk. I thought Punk was out, so I thought Cena was going to win when I watched this. Kind of a slow start here with these two. Headlock and kind of just trade moves, kind of getting the feeling each other out process.
That's fine. This is what we like.
Yeah, it's a slow build. It's not a boring slow build. A lot of it is also mannerisms. Punk's making a lot of good facials, and like Punk's mannerisms are really good here.
Yeah,
it's also Cena trying to kill the crowd a wee bit, playing the subtle heel-ness. He's just trying to kill the support.
Little headlock going on here. Who's calling this match, guys? You think Punk's calling it?
I've seen him whispering to Cena.
Spoiler alert, that's why I was asking.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
you kind of do see Punk whispering in his ear and Cena just trying to take it in. Nice. Nice little arm drag, drop kick by Punk.
Straight into his own headlock.
I love the look on his face with the headlock. Look at him. He had a little smirky smile on his face. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's such a fun little match, though. And first time I felt since I was a kid, like I didn't know who was going to win.
Yeah.
Oh, there he is again. That's it. If we watch it really closely, you can see him keep whispering. And look, it's kind of blatant, actually, don't you think?
Yeah, it's real bad. Like I've noticed at least three times, but it doesn't take anything away.
You're only gonna notice it if you're actually paying attention.
It's one of those things you only know if you know.
Yes.
And also, like one thing that is pretty funny is it's Scott Armstrong as the referee, which they would then use during the authority angle a couple years later as the crooked referee.
See, now why you got to bring the authority up during a pit? Again, why are we bringing up bad things on pedestal pods? What are we doing?
I'm sorry. Like, I just...
Last pod, you brought up TNA. Now you're bringing up the authority, Shiflet.
I know. I'm the worst.
He's providing some historical context.
I busted his chops. I'm just messing with you, Shif.
I know.
You didn't know you've not to bring up the authority.
What was Drew McIntyre doing in 2011?
He was Intercontinental Champion, you dick.
He was, wasn't he? He was.
He was.
He was. He was. I'm just pop quizzing. But why we're kind of a slow where they're kind of building and feeling each other out, I found a pop quiz column on Drew McIntyre.
I did like Cena nice. And Punk going back and forth with the FU. That was nice and both getting out of it. Well, he was going for the GTS, but...
I don't mind the mat wrestling because CM Punk's mantra is I'm the best in the world, and Cena mat wrestling is really not in character for him, so I'm okay with this.
Yeah, bring something new to it.
Yeah.
And I just remember the crowd being hot, going off my opinion, off of memory for like the whole match, which is pretty impressive. And also, I just noticed there's some Juggalos in the background.
Cena just
Go
ahead, Ben.
The other part of it is the fact that they could do this slow start is because they knew they'd got the crowd. They got the crowd in the palm of their hand, so they can get away with it, a slow start like this, because the crowd are going to be with them every step of the way.
They could build to the crescendo, to use a marker.
Yes. Everything's going to mean something, and that, you know. They could learn a lesson from this, frankly.
I mean, like, this is very un-Cena that we're watching, which makes it very different, which is why it's cool, I think.
Yeah, he's not just doing his five moves of doom.
No, he's actually doing rest holds, mat wrestling, and great suplex there by Punk. If I'm a little ahead, I apologize.
I do find it very strange that John Cena is doing all these technical things in jorts. It does seem a bit out of place.
Cena doing his best Ric Flair impression on this match. Lots of bat wrestling and selling, yes. And it's a great point on Colin on the jorts. Ric Flair would never be caught in jorts.
He should be wearing something like amateur gear, like, don't know, a singlet and a head thing that looks big headphones, yeah. like the 2 minute title holder, Josh Alexander.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
You know, I gave you praise for Drew. He was Intercontinental Champion, and you just have to. By the way, I always like this John Cena suplex that he does right here. It's almost like a cradle suplex or some form of it. Looks really good.
Do you see how Sean
Josh Alexander after I give praise to Drew? Shame on you. Go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
No, I was going to say that, but you brought it back. I was going to say to Cam, did you see the way that Sean tried to move the subject on there? But you brought it back, so thanks for that.
I did, because I didn't want to miss the move, because this is a pod about a serious pod, and I want to make sure we caught it. That's all. Good stuff going on here between the two now.
Yeah.
Well, now we got the figure four around the neck.
Yeah, I wouldn't say any of these are rest holds, but you know, they're holds with a point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some people, if they would watch the beginning of this, would think it's kind of a slow roll. But, and by the way, we also got to mention, even though it's not on, the commentary for this match is also on point. So it's kind of probably one of the better commentary heard in one of these matches in WWE in a long time. Oh, look at that.
That was a nice DDT. Or am I in front of you guys?
I don't know where you're at.
Oh,
Cena just got tossed out of the ring.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm falling behind.
I'm right with Sean, so I'm at 2:20:30 now.
Okay, I'm 5 seconds behind. He just got thrown out of the ring.
Okay, yeah, we're not too far.
Oh, I'm 2:20:15. Right, I'm miles back. Right, let's skip forward.
That British internet.
Oh,
I don't know how he's done that, because it's not skipped anything. I've seen everything.
There was a reminder there of the Raw GM, the virtual Raw GM. So you know,
yes. Another tragedy.
Not everything in 2011 was perfect.
Wait! I don't want to spoil this one. This move is amazing because it looks so savage what he's about to do to Cena. If you're not there yet. Oh my God! Wait till you get to it. When you get to the him dropping a knee on Cena's head outside the ring, let me know.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Oof.
Oh shit! That was really nice right there.
Savage.
And I love how he just goes to like Ace Steel and Colt and just jaw jacks with them as well. I'm the shit.
Yeah, he slapped hands with them multiple times every time he goes out. Like you can tell he's just like loving this moment right now. And I love
go ahead. Sorry, Scott.
And I love when he was like doing the pin, like you could see like it was like it took everything just to push him. He's like pushing him with his head right there. It's just a nice little added detail that I love. What were we gonna say, Sean?
I don't remember now. It's okay.
It's all right. You got to remember, Scott. Sean's old. He'll forget points as soon as he makes them.
Yeah, and it is 9:06 East Coast time, Scott. So.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
And I love how both go on, Ben.
No, I was going to say, you're on with two guys from the UK who are 4 hours ahead, so you're not going to get much sympathy about the time.
No, I know.
I just love how both of Punk and Cena are just like, you know, just exhausted right now. And they still got about 20 minutes left, which is pretty impressive.
Yes.
I will say that it's flown by pretty quick, and they haven't really done anything like super spectacular. I think the big spot of the match was that knee drop he just did outside, but it's flowed pretty well for as long as it's been on.
Yep. And I know in the first episode, we talked about how much we loved Savage's gear. This is my peak Punk gear with just the Chicago flag. And as that, I just loved it. I think back when I used to download and play the SmackDown vs. Raw video games, someone created this attire, and I downloaded it immediately when they had it. So
I love those games.
Yeah, it was yeah, I just couldn't get enough of those games back in the day. But now I watch Callum play Backstage Assault.
Backstage Assault is underrated. I had great fun doing that.
See, that was nice there, the jump up to the top rope followed by the crossbody.
Yeah, Cena is like, I know we, like you mentioned it, Ben, we were in full LOL Cena, then, you know, Super Cena, but you know, man is really good at his job.
He is very good, actually. Well, it looks like Cena hurt himself. I thought he legit hurt himself here, by the way, when I was watching live.
Oh, me too. I was like, oh my god, Punk has all this stuff and just tore the Golden Horseshoe's knee.
You know, the best matches are the ones that make you believe that it is real. Because, like, when you watch this match, one of the things I love is it entrenches you to the point of where you suspend disbelief and you just get caught up in it and don't, oh, my God, holy shit, what a match.
I mean, the Cena thing, like what Scott says, it's a bit like how Roman Reigns is now. You know, he was on such a level at this point that there was nobody at this point in 2011 who was there with him. And, you know, Edge was there for maybe a little bit, and it took this particular set of circumstances to get Punk to a place where he was believable enough to be in a match with Cena.
By the way, that suplex that he just did to the outside of the ring, you didn't see shit like that in 2011.
No. He lands like right on his back. Like, you see like people saying, oh shit. It's pretty sickening. Like, and I love like one thing, like with our first episode, we had a clear heel and a clear baby face. Both of these guys, it's like shades of gray where you don't have a clear heel or a clear baby face. I know the crowd has a clear heel and baby face, but Cena and Punk aren't wrestling like that. There's no shortcuts being taken.
Punk was a heel going into it. Like, I mean, pre this whole feud, he was the
heel. Yeah. Yeah, with New Nexus, which was terrible.
And by the way, Ben, correct me. We did Chicken Salad. We did Mania 27. Punk Orton was our match of the night, was it not?
Punk Orton was a banger.
Yeah, Punk Orton. That's right. Punk Orton. Yeah, that's right. That was probably the best match on the show.
Yeah, that's when Orton got rid of the New Nexus by punting them all to OB or FCW.
That was the one with the RKO and out midair, which was fantastic.
Yes.
Yep.
Only bright spot on that show.
Yeah. I don't know. Lawler versus Cole was 5 stars.
Ooh, that's a nice move.
Kidding. Ooh! Nice. Yeah, I'm digging this match totally. I like how they've started slow and they're just building. And now they're kind of in the middle of it, building to like this is a really thought out, well laid out match.
I mean, you know, look at
that's
look
nice, at, like shoulder breaker.
Look at the crowd though. You know, you've got a couple of people there taking cameras, but everybody's focused on the ring. There's nobody, you know, on the phone. Everybody's looking. That tells you how much a crowd you're into things.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ben. You see, everybody is just enthralled with the match. It's kind of like this match sucks you in and you suspend disbelief and you're just there for the ride. I love these kind of matches. Ooh, nice punches.
Yep.
I mean, Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
I was going to say, we're however many minutes into this match now, and this abdominal stretch is probably the first rest hold the match. You know, we're 15 minutes in at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say in this match, I hate going back to the Crockett era. This match kind of reminds me of one of those Ric Flair 30-minute matches he would have against Garvin or Wyndham. Crockett Roll, we're getting ready to watch Battle of the Belts 2 as of this recording, and it's that 45-minute Wyndham banger. I haven't seen it forever, but I feel like this kind of goes old school a little bit with how it builds and builds and builds. It's very old school, very old school.
Well, it's totally different from anything that was being seen on the project at this point. I mean, you know, Callum and Scott, you guys could probably answer it a bit better than me. But, you know, like I say, there was a reason I stopped watching. And, you know, it was, you know, like you said, Sean, like Undertaker K-matches part 8,000. You know, we didn't need to see that again. But this is a totally different, you know, match and a totally different style that we hadn't seen in a long, long time.
And you can compare it to Steamboat Savage a little bit, to where it kind of sticks out. Like you brought up, it's time. You can compare it to Steamboat Savage for at its time. This was something you never see before, which makes it great. So you could do similarities in that aspect of both those matches. Great back and forth here between Punk and Cena.
Oh, and, you know, this is when you start getting nervous, because this one Cena starts going through his five moves of doom with the shoulder blocks. Oh.
There you go.
And he's hit the knee as well. So, you know when the STF gets put on.
Oh, wait, are we going to give a you can't see me here?
I think we are.
Oh, of course we are. Go back to what you know, John.
But he knew the crowd was going to boo him on this.
He got kicked in the face when he did it. Amazing. Loved it.
But I love when he did the you can't see me. He does like a little shoulder shrug. Like, I know you fucks are going to hate this, but
then Punk kneed his ass out of the ring. And it, oh, that's amazing.
Oh, that's a great, that is a great dive to the floor.
Yes.
And this was like before suicide dives were done like six times a match. Yeah. So. And that was a nice clean suicide dive. I don't think he might have touched the ropes, but. And then, like, he high fives his mom right there. I can't gush about this match more, okay? Like, I fucking love this match.
I mean, we talked in the last pod about, like, what that match meant to other wrestlers in the Savage Steamboat match, but you can see right here what this match, I mean, this is 10 years ago now, and you can see where, you know, NXT and then latterly with AEW, exactly the influence that this has had. It's there, it can correlate, you can see it perfectly. Go on, Cal, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, sorry, I was just looking back, so when you were talking about how different it was to what it's gone before. I've got the card up for Money in the Bank 2010. It's not good. pre-show.
Hey, Callum, spoiler alert. 2010 WWE is not good.
No, but I'm just looking through. There's nothing like... So, Kane won Money in the Bank. Then you've got Alicia Fox and Eve Torres. The Hart Dynasty against the Usos, who I think has just debuted.
Ooh.
But that was 5 minutes. Rey Mysterio against Jack Swagger.
Oh.
Then Kane cashed in on Rey Mysterio. Then you've got Layla against Kelly. Miz won the Money in the Bank, and Sheamus beat Cena in a cage.
I kind of feel like that could be chicken salad worthy, Ben, based
that
on
sounds,
what I just heard.
That sounds very... I was going to say, that doesn't sound very salad worthy. We haven't done a Money in the Bank yet.
No.
Sorry, Callum, while you were talking, Cena tried to do the FU, and Punk was able to get out of it. It wasn't as clean, but it still sold like everything with the match, where they're both starting to get tired, might not be able to reverse everything, and
they're reversing each other. They're reversing each other back and forth. That's what I like. Punk's five moves of doom. Punk's now turned back two of them, and then Punk just did the same thing, Cena just did the same to him on the GTS. Just did a side power bomb on him. It's really good. It's not one person taking like, it's like a really good back and forth. It could be any like I like that as well. Very big difference in Steamboat Savage is there's not a clear-cut person here. They're very even-keeled right now.
Yeah, it's a real 50-50 match.
Well, here we go.
I think actually watching it again, what I'm really liking about it is how it starts, like we said, you know, it starts off slow. It starts with that sort of NWA Crockett technical wrestling bit at the beginning, and now we're getting into a proper like WWE big move match, so they're molding the styles together, and it works seamlessly.
Yes, I agree. And so we kind of missed it, but I didn't say it, but Punk hit a really savage looking knee and then just did that off the top rope from the apron clothesline to Cena. I always like that
the replay. Oh
yes, that knee was, look at that knee to the face. Ooh. That dude, that is like a, how did he not break his nose on that? Holy cow.
Because he's the best in the world, Sean.
Because he can't see him. Oh my god, that replay is savage.
So nice they've got to replay it twice.
I would. Shit, that was great.
I mean, that's almost worth the star on its own.
Oh. Now we got
Yes.
Daniel Bryan
here
kicks.
Yes.
I was going to say, here come Punk's version of the yes kicks.
Were the yes kicks a thing at this time yet? No.
I don't think so.
No, because had he even started doing the yes no thing at this stage?
No. End of the year, I think.
Yes, when he won the title by beating Big Show after the Mark Henry match.
Okay, all right.
That you know, just to go off topic a little, that is one of my favorite cash-ins ever, because I love the fact he said, I'm never going to do it that way, and that's exactly how he won the title.
when was that, 2012?
TLC 2011, yeah. 2011,
yeah. 2011.
December of this year.
Okay.
But had the ring not collapsed or something, was it not? Was it not at the end of that?
No. A different one. It's a Mark Henry Big Show match, but it's a different one.
Yeah, they were having like a chair match or something, yeah. And they were took each other out. I thought, you know, the whole crowd would have went crazy. I mean, would have been deflated if he tapped. I thought he was going to tap there, because this was when, you know, everyone tapped to the STF.
Nice kick there. Nice kick to the temple.
I wonder if this match is now in Booker T's Shucky Ducky Quack Quack top five matches.
This is pre Shucky Ducky Quack Quack. You know, I totally forgot Booker T was on commentary for this. I'll have to take it down a star.
And also, Sean, you'll have to take it down, because when Punk walked out, Cole goes walking out to a bipartisan crowd, and I guess like Vince probably like flipped his shit, because then Waller's like, this is like if the Bears were going to play the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl was held in Chicago. I don't know what the hell you were talking about, Cole. Like, that's how much like I've watched like this match, and it's like holds a special place in my heart. I remember random commentary lines.
Yeah, oh, I love that. I love that roll through.
This crowd is like the Bears playing the Super Bowl in Chicago against the Bears.
Yes.
By the way, Booker T can't take it down a star, because commentary is not a part of our field. So I'm glad I took commentary out. That saves us the problem.
Yep.
Even though the commentary is very good on this show, it is.
And right here, the GTS, I thought it was over, but nope. He switches right to the STF. God, it's just amazing. And
I'm not a big fan of the STF.
No, his is terrible. But I remember Austin on his podcast was like, "Damn, son, get your shit in to Cena." But I do like how
he's not
they have
twerking on his neck, Scott. Here, like, he's not even twerking on it. Really, he just kind of has it hanging loose.
I know. But what I do like is they haven't hit any of their big moves. Like, you know, this was Cena's like 1B move, but like you can get to the ropes on it.
Oh, I do love the Anaconda Vice though.
Look at
that is a great move.
I was just going to say, it wasn't even a reversal, was it? He just naturally placed it in.
And it's because he didn't have it cinched in, Sean.
Well, but it is the Anaconda Vice is such a simplistic but savage-looking submission. And then the crowd outside is going ape shit for this move, by the way.
Yeah, like they're hitting the side. Everyone's on their feet right now. God.
I will say as well, I love a wrestler who has a submission and, you know, and a proper finisher.
Yes. And by the way, when watching this live, that's where I thought the match was over, right there.
Yeah.
Yep, right here with the FU, which I just said they hadn't hit their big moves.
Yeah, because they pulled out Cena's submission, and they did the Anaconda Vice, and then the FU. It's like, all right, well, they reversed both things. Now they're going to finish it. And it was a pleasant surprise to see Punk kick out there.
You know, I've just said that. I've just had the memory then of when of that 2003 war run when Triple H tried to use the Indian Deathlock, and I'm probably going to have nightmares for the rest of the night.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah.
I remember that one. From SmackDown, here comes the pain. That was the longest move in the game. It took about 3.5 days from start to finish.
Cena going up top. He was never really a top rope man.
This was a, he did do this top rope. This is what
leg drop, right?
I love this. His leg drop when he does this. Oh, but yeah, we get caught with a power bomb. Nice.
He went through a wee spell of doing that all the time. Did he not think he was? Mm. Was it not? I'm sure he injured the Rock doing that. And I think that was the end of that move.
Yeah, he did a top look. He did a top rope leg drop a lot in his matches. Well, it always looked really good.
I remember there was that the match at SummerSlam when Batista gave him the power bomb when he did the exact same move, and
yes,
that injured him. Did it?
It did.
Right. I guess John Cena will always try something different. Remember he went through the phase of doing the springboard stunner.
Yeah,
as it was, or as Michael Cole affectionately called it, didn't quite get all of that one.
Yeah. So guys, why they're still wrestling and it's back and forth? So Cena, where do you guys view Cena as an all timer in the WWE? Like, where do you rank him? Like, if you were to do a top 10, like, does he make your top 10 all time?
Oh
yeah, and
there's the leg drop. Oh, fucking A, Savage.
And I'm probably gonna catch shit, but I would put him in the top five.
You wouldn't catch shit from me because I'd put him in the top five.
I would probably put him in there as well. I think we talked about it on the WrestleMania 17 portion of the WrestleMania Summit, but Tim was talking about how we didn't appreciate The Rock in his time. How good he was, and I think Cena's exactly the same. I think it's only now that Cena's, like, I was going to say no longer with us, he's not dead, but when he's not wrestling as often, I think people are now appreciating him more, like going back to watch stuff like this.
I mean, look at the US Open Challenge that he did. I think that opened a lot of people's eyes. Which you guys were talking about with the stunner, because that's where he busted it out, was that springboard stunner. Yeah.
And his feud his AJ Styles feud was amazing. They did great. And him and Owens, too, also had some good stuff.
I hope we can talk about one of the Cena-AJ match from SummerSlam, because that's
one day.
Yes.
Another FU, Punk kicks out.
That's a great point, because it's kind of the same, and I've said it already, it's kind of the same point, same thing with Roman Reigns now. It was always the booking of Cena. Cena, the athlete, Cena, the wrestler, I never had a problem with. It was the booking of Cena I had an issue with.
It was Super Cena. It was SummerSlam 2010 where he killed Nexus.
And it wasn't necessarily Cena's fault, but Scott's bang on the money there. It's the whole Super Cena thing.
I think part of his problem as well is they tried too hard with him at the very start. So they put him in with guys like Chris Jericho and Kurt Angle. Because from their point of view, Jericho and Angle are that good that they can get people to boo them. But it gave off the impression they were putting them in with guys who were really good to get good matches out of them. And then you see them drag a decent match out of the Great Khali and drag decent matches out of
Umaga.
Yeah.
Umaga at New Year's Revolution.
Yeah. And the Royal Rumble. And then it goes, like, as you said, Scott, in 2015 goes into Cena and starts having these bangers with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. I had the SummerSlam and the Rumble matches both on my GWWE list. I think the two of them just have this natural ability to have good matches with each other.
Those were some savage elbows when Cena was trying to do the super FU.
I want to go back to something Ben said earlier where, hey, is this the match where Cena kind of people realize he was a good wrestler? Ben, what I will tell you is if you've never watched Cena ever and you put on this match, this definitely does show that Cena can wrestle. So I will piggyback on what you said about that. He is a total wrestler in this match.
Oh yeah, totally. Like I said, I'm quite happy to put him in the top five of all time. I've got no problem with that. It's always been the booking of Cena that's been my problem. Like, you know, going from what Callum just said, what got him over in the first place? The Doctor of Thuganomics, the rapping and all that. What did they do straight away to take they stripped that character away, and they never should have done that. You know, it's quite obvious even now looking back. They weren't going into the PG era until 2008, so they could quite easily have kept the edginess going.
And sorry to cut you off, Ben, but going back to the match when Punk hit the GTS and Cena rolls out of the ring, I was like, that's it. Cena's going to win. Like, this is over. And, like, the look of desperation on his face.
I love that little touch he does. Like, you just said, that look of desperation of him trying to cling on to him as well. Like, cling on to the jorts and he can't do it.
And now Punk and Johnny Ace are out now, too. Or not Punk, Johnny Ace and McMahon. Sorry about that.
Straight to the SCF in the middle of the ring.
Vince doing and there's Brett trying to do Montreal screw job, right, man? Yeah. Get out there, Ace. Turn the bell.
Cena crushes Ace with this.
Just getting us ready for that big main event next year.
But, like, damn, like, he, like, crushed Johnny Ace. Man.
Big main event in 2012.
Yeah, you know when John Cena has the worst year of his life, but it's in every pay-per-view main event, that one.
Oh,
and here we go.
And we have a new champion. Holy shit.
I mean, look at the crowd again. They're losing their shit, and it's the disbelief. They just can't believe, like, what's actually happened.
I like the Lagana sign. That's right next to Vince as he frowns. It's good.
Actually, the Lagana sign, that was like the first wrestling podcast that I ever listened to. And it led me to Art of Wrestling, then led me to HistoryWWF.com, where I discovered the PTBN pod. So that's I'm okay with the Lagana thing.
So in theory, McMahon caused Cena to lose, in theory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and Johnny Laryngitis.
Yes, Johnny Laryngitis.
Shot Cena on the floor with the title, with the big cheesy grin. I love that shot.
I also like that they let him winning play out and just let him celebrate and soak in the crowd reaction. I think that's awesome.
And this bit now that's coming up, because, I mean, you know, if everybody can remember back 10 years ago, this was the big prediction, wasn't it, that they were going to do the Money in the Bank cash in straight after.
Yes. And by the way, I love that the announcers are also saying there's in 1 hour and 14 minutes, he will no longer be employed by WWE. Vince is going to put shit on the headset. Cut, cut, cut. He's all
send him out. Send him out. Send out Del Rio.
Get him the hell out of my ring. Send out. Yeah, I love it. Send out Bird Del Rio.
Talk about a charisma vacuum
is Del Rio.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, even that adds a touch of realism there, doesn't it? The fact he has to get, you know, the music doesn't play straight away. The fact he's got to go onto the King's headset to get Del Rio to hurry up out there.
You know, Ben, sometimes shoots actually work. This is a case of a wrestling match where a shoot, and there comes Del Rio. I love it. Bam! Great ending, and loved it. Knocks him in the head.
Was Del Rio, like, taking Punk's a piss or something?
Came out. Oh, you're behind again, Scott.
Yeah, no, I know, it's fine. But then,
and
like...
Punk's face in this is great, and then he escapes through the crowd. What a hell of an ending this is. Like, if I was ever going to turn into Monday Night Raw, it definitely would have been after this show. You caught me.
Amazing. The kiss goodbye to Vince, and then just out with these people.
And Vince just stares at him. He walks through the crowd. What a great ending too! Like this, the ending itself and the aftermatch, everything in this is just fantastic. And we are out. So guys, I that match was long, but I felt it was really good from a wrestling standpoint. They started off slow. They had a really good midpoint, and they built to the crescendo on the ending. So before I give my score on the match, I will go to Scott first. What do you feel about the match 1-5?
I mean, if you've been paying attention, we should all know that this is getting another 5 across the board for me. I love this match. It built up, and it peaked perfectly. Bunch of false finishes, and here's the mark of a perfect match. I've seen this match like 10 times. I still got goosebumps watching the end of the match when he hits the GTS, like, because you don't believe it's going to happen. I rank it up there. It's up there with WrestleMania 30 main event with Bryan winning to me. Like, that's two of the things that have kept me into wrestling in the past 10 years. And I just, it's a perfect five for me.
All right, Scott goes five. Colm?
I'm going to go with a perfect five as well, because the one thing I wanted to do, and I didn't have the sound on at all. I had the captions on, as I always do, but I didn't have any sound in the background because I don't know if it was on through the looking glass that you mentioned earlier on, or if it was on a recent edition of JT's Mailbag over in the North South feed. Somebody had mentioned, was the match actually good, or was it the crowd and the whole atmosphere and the aura surrounding the show that made it five stars? A bit like the argument that we had for WrestleMania 17 back in the Summit podcast. So I watched it without any sound. I just watched the match bell to bell, and it was superb. The story was there. Cena and Punk both held up their end of the bargain. There was absolutely no, it wasn't a carry job from either men. Both men just went, knew their roles, done them absolutely perfectly. And it was almost like the evolution for Cena. It was almost like the evolution of One Night Stand, 2005. It was just like another step to that. But yeah, it was absolutely excellent. So it does have to get five stars for me.
Yeah, and Colm, it's interesting because literally, I know you popped in here and there, but I could totally tell you were soaking in the match, trying to take it all in terms of a wrestling match. So I think you framed work what you did really perfectly in what you just said. So, and it's really cool. And I think you brought up 17, and one of my arguments with 17 was always, is it the crowd? Is it the environment? Is it the match? And this is a shit take on my end, but I enjoyed this match much, much better than I enjoyed that 17 main event, because this match was really, really good, and it wasn't a brawl. It really started out slow, built to a crescendo, and I thought overall as a wrestling match, this one was fantastic. Ben, I am also going five on this match because of it, because same things Colm said. I am going five.
Let's make it a full house. It's not a shit take to say that, Sean, because this is my second favorite WWE match of all time. Two guys at the absolute top of their game in front of a crowd that is molten hot, and it's just like I say, like I said when we were watching it, it's just a mix of styles. It's just everything. The storytelling is absolutely perfect. Love it.
All right, so we ran the gamut on match, 5 out of 5. So pretty fantastic. So let's do the historical part of it, and then we'll end the show. So I will go to Colm first. So historical relevance of this match on a scale of 1 to 5, and what are your thoughts?
This is a strange one for me. So historical relevance, yes. I mean, it must be. You can't understate the impact that it had on the wrestling business. As we said right at the start, it got Ben. I mean, I was still watching for better or for worse at that time, but it got everyone else back into the WWE. So you can't not say that it's not got some historical importance. It is ruined. See, I don't know if it's ruined slightly with how they worked it in the aftermath, because it did all work out quite well for all involved, particularly CM Punk. I think I'll go 4.25 on it. I think it's been watered down slightly by what happened in the immediate aftermath. I do think, and for the points that Scott and Dave made on through the looking glass, they could have done a lot more with it. But again, we're talking about it here 10.5 years later, so it's not unimportant. It's not like a drop in the ocean or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of stuff historically, the match itself, but the aftermath with Nash involved and Triple H, I kind of see your point. It gets watered down a little bit, so I'll have to think through that as I think through my part. Ben, what did you think from a historical relevance?
So like Colin says, take the Nash and the Triple H part out of it, and you know, the aftermath is almost perfect. And it made Punk into a main event player, and he needed this match to get there. And we got that year-long title reign, you know, which we hadn't seen for a, you know, I know Cena had one at one in 07 into 08, but we'd not seen like a really massive title reign like this for a long time, and it was getting fans back into the, you know, getting fans used to that again. So we talk about the relevance of the storyline, and like I say, you've got the relevance of what it means to wrestlers today. You know, like I said, you saw that influence in NXT back when NXT was in its hot streak. You're seeing it now with AEW. You're seeing it now with Impact as well. This, you know, it's a match that shows that, you know, smaller guys, athletic guys, can have a great match. Can succeed in the land of the giants. And, you know, as we've said several times, it also shows that John Cena is a bloody good wrestler.
All right. So, what was your score, Ben?
Sean. I'll go 4.5. I'll go slightly higher than Callum.
All right. And Scott, how about you? Historical relevance, 1 through 5.
I'm going 3.5. I know this is a shocker because I was 5s across the board, but as Ben and Callum both talked about, WWE, and like this is talked about on Through the Looking Glass, if you guys more in depth, WWE could have had a bona fide superstar. Yes, Punk is a superstar, but he could have been a transcendent superstar. He could have been on like Cena's thing as the guy, but they dropped the ball literally the next night. And they dropped the ball to wrestle at Summer, which is supposed to be the Summer of Punk. I mean, for fuck's sake, SummerSlam ends with Kevin Nash jackknifing Punk and Del Rio cashing in. So then, like, Punk then loses to Triple H. Like I said, it's talked about more on the Looking Glass. Like, that's my plug for it. But they dropped the ball with Punk. He should have been – it should have been Cena and him as 1A and 1B. And coming out of this, it looked like Cena and Punk were 1A and 1B. But very quickly, it's shown – Cena is 1, Punk is 2. And they dropped the ball for it. I mean, yes, we're still talking about it 10 years later, but it's one of the biggest what-ifs in wrestling history to me. At least WWE. So yeah, that's why I'm putting it at 3.5.
Okay, so I am actually going to go 4. I agree with a little bit of everything you guys said on historic relevance. The match itself gets people back to watching wrestling. They come to back to see what happens at SummerSlam. They kind of crap the bed on it a little bit. But here's the thing. It does build to a long-term reign for Punk in the end, where he gets the belt back and he holds it for 400 and some days. And unfortunately, where I'm going to agree with Scott a little bit is you can really see that Punk, you can best probably have an argument to say Punk is not even number 2. He is number 3 because, gentlemen, who does he lose the belt to in the long title run?
The Rock.
So they could set up Cena versus Rock at WrestleMania. So for me, if I'm Punk, I had this great title reign, and then I'm going into WrestleMania, and I'm going to lose my belt to The Rock. By the way, the second best Cena match ever, I think, with Punk and Cena was the match they had to see who was going to go to WrestleMania to face The Rock. Isn't that correct?
Yes, yeah, it's that Raw match. It's very good. They bust out the pile driver.
Yeah, I think that's the second best match these two have ever had. But in theory, Scott, you might be a little right. Except he's not, he gets the year title run, but in the end, they flushed it all down the toilet so they could get the Rock and Cena for the title. So I am going to go 4. I'm going to go 4 on that. But anyways, guys, here's what it does. So on our build, we have a score of 4.87, historical value of 4.06. I'm a little stunned at your 3.5, Scott, so you surprised me there, but it's a 4.06. And match, we're at 5. So overall score, 4.64. So this match now, out of our first two pods, leads the pedestal rankings right now. So it's at 4.64, and Savage versus Steamboat is at a 4.39, so it leads by a wide margin. So before we go, Ben, anything you would like to add to this match before we sign off?
Only thing I would say is I think with the storyline, they literally go wrong by a show. Like, instead of having Punk appear at that at the end of Mysterio Cena at Raw, save that match for SummerSlam and then have Punk come out at SummerSlam, because literally the next pay-per-view is called Night of Champions or Clash of Champions, and you've got these two world champions. So we can have the match there to decide who wins the title. You've got the pay-per-view buys, just keep it going.
Yeah, oh, by the way, Ben, you just reminded me. The one thing that I did like at the aftermatch was Punk just showing up everywhere. So he showed up at Comic-Con with the belt. Scott, yeah, you should remember that, right?
Yeah, he, at the Mattel one.
Yeah,
he,
and then he ran the, and then the belt in the fridge. If you guys remember
the belt
that,
in the fridge is a great one.
Yeah. So there is some good stuff in the aftermath. So I wanted to be remiss and not talk. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Colm, any final thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that can be faulted with the match at all. On the night and the build up, there was a lot left to be desired for the sort of the follow up. He threatened to turn up to all these places. Why not? If they weren't so insular, why not let him turn up for a match at Ring of Honor with the belt? Why not let him turn up to New Japan with the belt? If he's going to, because he already turned up to Comic Con and all these places, have him just like arrange that he like just drops into these places, like going like random things like College Game Day or something, just anything that he's turning up with a belt and making a nuisance of himself. But you can't fault anything. Like as of the whatever it was, hour and 4 minutes before his contract expired, it was absolutely excellent. It was as near to perfect as you can probably get.
All right, thank you. And Scott, any final thoughts on this match?
Just if you haven't seen it in a while, go out of your way and watch it. It's a brisk, like it's 34 minutes, and with everything else, it's like 40 minutes. But just go out of your way and watch it. It's just amazing, and it shows how great wrestling can be, and what we deserve as fans. So
yeah, the last thing I would say to this match, and then we'll sign off, is I think WWE today could go back and take a look at what they did here 10 years ago. And try to figure out some kind of element of surprise, some kind of formula with somebody they already have that might be similar to a Punk or someone they see as a Punk. And not necessarily duplicate it, but figure out a way to get the same kind of spark that they could kick off a star the same way they did Punk. I think this is a great schoolbook way of taking somebody who had been, you know, who's popular, but in kind of a job territory and rebuild them back to being a bigger star. And I think the WWE today has a lot of stars that are like that. It's kind of a lot of 50-50 booking. It's a lot of, you know, same people going over, same people losing. You know, kind of like Drew McIntyre where he loses a lot. But, you know, at least now he does. But I'm just kidding, Colm. But
I'm not even going to rise to that.
No, but that's somebody that literally was not on the radar. And then when he came in back to the WWE, they made him a star. And I feel like they could do that with somebody else. That's my whole point. So I'm joking about that. Because they made, he was one of the most fun things to watch and kept the pandemic going, to be honest with you. Right? And that's what kept me involved is Drew. I know I joke I don't like him, but they honestly made a star out of Drew. Then they did a little bit of it with Lashley, too. So they have people to do it with. They just need to ride the train and do it, not do so much 50-50 bullshit.
Sorry, Cal.
Go ahead,
Cal. There you go, man. There you go.
I was going to say, they love knocking people down and just have them go on these massive losing streaks and then building them back up for some reason. Yes. Like you say, just pick a guy and just go with him and just see what happens. Like, I know you guys all love Big E, for God's sake, but what did he actually win match-wise before he won Money in the Bank, for example? I can't think of anything.
Nothing, and now he's their world champion. So that's what I'm saying.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they built up, I mean, he, to your point, Ben, he did job a lot, that he won Money in the Bank, and that's how they got him where he got. So you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Not wrong.
But go ahead, Colin. They've watered down the concept as well, because when it comes to the yearly defense by Dolph Ziggler, so you've got a first-time champion, and the first thing you do is put him in a match at Extreme Rules against Dolph Ziggler. Every single time. It happened with Dean Ambrose, it happened with Drew, and the guys just, it's always every single time, it's always the same thing. I have been held back for years. This is my time. I deserve better. It's always the same thing. So it's not quite a pipe bomb. It's like great value pipe bomb. It's like a daily and a dollar shot. But it's, if you could get, I don't know, a Cesaro, Kevin Owens might be a bit too far gone, like a bit too big for a pipe bomb, but someone at a Cesaro level. Even Bobby Lashley before, but then that was what the MVP's thing about the Hurt Business, that these guys have been held back for too long, and look where it is now. The Hurt Business were the best thing going at one of the best things going at the second half of the year last year. Raw became watchable because you had Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre on top.
There is
potential there for it, but as long as you don't do it half-baked Dolph Ziggler style, then yeah, I think it could absolutely work.
Yep, I agree. So guys, really good episode. I appreciate all of you joining me for the first two episodes. On our next episode, number three, there'll be a new host and a different round of panelists unless one of you decide to join. But again, great first two episodes of Pedestal. So right now, after the first two, just to recap, we have both matches are considered Pedestal matches, but Punk Cena at a 4.64 leads Savage over Steamboat at a 4.39. But I appreciate all of you guys, and we will see you again on PTBM Pedestal on episode number three in a few weeks. Thanks, everybody. Try to be best, 'cause you're only a man.